As of March 6th, there are over 6,500 reported coronavirus cases in South Korea. It is currently the country with the second largest number of coronavirus patients. The large number, however, may be less a reflection of South Korea's exposure to the disease and more of the country's proactive effort to screen and test people for the viral infection. The country has tested over 140,000 people, setting up stations throughout the country and employing all public resources, including its universal healthcare system and the military, to establish the infrastructure needed to treat patients. The thoroughness of the country's approach to coronavirus is evident in its fatality rate, standing at 0.57%. This is far lower than the 3.4% figure cited by the World Health Organization, and it reflects either South Korea's ability to detect patients more quickly and more thoroughly, or its ability to treat patients more effectively. Nonetheless, the disease has been a major strain on South Korea socially, economically, and politically. Our guest today will walk us through how the coronavirus is affecting the country today. With no further delay, from the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., I'm your host, Yong Kwon, and you're listening to Korean Context. We have with us today Kyle Ferrier, Director of Academic Affairs and Fellow at the Korea Economic Institute. He's recently written a couple of articles for The Diplomat magazine on the outbreak of the coronavirus and its impact on South Korea. Kyle, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Yong.
So, Kyle, if you would, before we jump into the conversation, could you contextualize the scale of the coronavirus outbreak for us? Of course, South Korea, like its neighbors, is no stranger to the influenza outbreaks. We've had SARS, we've had MERS in the past. Is the coronavirus actually worse than previous influenza outbreaks in the region?
So it's spreading a lot faster than SARS and MERS did, but it's not necessarily as deadly. SARS hit South Korea in 2003 with three cases and no deaths. There was overall in the region, there was about an 11% case fatality rate, meaning if you had the disease, there was about 11% chance of you dying. And it didn't really hit Korea too hard. It hit others in the region, particularly China and Hong Kong, a lot more. And then in 2015, South Korea faced the MERS epidemic, and there was 186 cases in the country. And 36 of those resulted in fatalities, which was sort of in line with the overall 34% case fatality rate of the disease. But COVID-19, the new coronavirus, there's been over 5,600 cases, so a lot more cases, but only about 32 deaths, which in Korea's case is about a 0.5% of mortality rate, which is much less than the 2% case fatality rate for the disease in the world right now. So it's spreading a lot quicker than SARS and MERS did in South Korea, but South Koreans aren't necessarily faring worse than they did under SARS or MERS.
Right. So people are responding to the expansive infection rate of this disease, but not necessarily because this is more deadly than previous diseases.
Exactly. And I think that that's really what's been most concerning with COVID-19 is how quickly it can seem to be contained. You know, in South Korea, in mid-February, there was a period where there was only about somewhere between 20 and 30 patients for a week there, and it just sort of was about the same level. And then with the advent of patient 31, there was a huge uptick in cases, and that led to 29 cases in 1 week, and then by a couple weeks later, here we are, we have over 5,600 cases. So it's really the propensity for the disease to spread, much more so than its ability to result in death once you have it.
Well, maybe you could go a little deeper on that issue for us. What is it that caused that sudden spike? Was there a public policy error, a misstep by the South Korean government? Or was it just something that was just waiting to happen where because of the rate and the speed with which this new coronavirus is infecting people, it was just waiting to infect way more than 30?
Well, so it depends really on who you talk to in Korea, but it really kind of boils down to this one person I mentioned earlier, patient 31, who had no record of traveling to China or interacting with someone who was known to have the coronavirus. And this person was part of pretty much a cult in South Korea, the Shincheonji cult. And she went to an assembly with over 1,000 people there in close quarters. And then that really helped to spread the disease a lot more quickly. And it was only afterwards, after being to a couple of these assemblies, that the hospital had realized that she had this disease. And by that time, the disease had spread a lot more quickly. And so the epicenter of the outbreak really has been Daegu, the city where she was. And the government has gone to great lengths to try and contain the disease in that area.
Which is quite curious because I think a lot of people assume that this disease is taking place in Seoul or in a more noticeable, well-known large cities like Incheon or Busan. But in fact, it's happening in kind of a secondary city in South Korea, which is quite interesting. You mentioned South Korea's public response to this disease. And of course, a lot of people have drawn contrast between South Korea's response and China's response. China, of course, has put Wuhan and some of its surrounding cities under a lockdown. It has been enforcing very draconian regulations regarding travel. These are not what the South Korean government has done in response to the outbreak. Could you tell us a little bit about South Korea's response?
So yes, you're right. South Korea has a very different, at least since the late 80s, a very different style of government than the Chinese state does. And so the government has not implemented a complete national shutdown or at least the quarantine of Daegu itself, but has gone to great lengths to try and contain the disease in Daegu while still allowing for free movement of people and goods, even though they're discouraging people from assembling or going to work and, you know, taking time to work from home to help contain the spread of the disease. And at the center of the Moon administration's efforts has really been an effort to test for the disease. And no country really is good about testing as South Korea has been. They've been testing at least 10,000 people a day in the past couple of weeks. And the number of tested in South Korea has risen to recently over 120,000 people. And people listening have probably seen the drive through testing stations and may also know about South Korean soju companies taking the byproducts of their alcohol distillery and using that to make the hand sanitizers that the country needs to deal with the coronavirus. So it's really been an all-out effort, not just on public side, but also the government's trying to encourage as much private involvement as possible to contain the spread of the virus. As I mentioned earlier, it's really centered around Daegu. And 9 out of the 10 new cases for the coronavirus are really tied to patient 31, either by being a member of the church or interacting with them in some capacity. So everything is focused down there. That's not to say that the government isn't testing in other places, but if you look at where the efforts are, they're really concentrated towards where the disease seems to be the hottest.
And I've read some domestic criticisms in South Korea that the government did not prepare enough masks for civilians, that there's not enough masks in the private market, and that the government ought to have done more aggressive testing before patient 31 was able to infect other people. But in context to how other countries have been dealing with it, for instance, I read today that the United States only has perhaps 1% of the masks that would be needed if there is a mass outbreak in this country. The CDC has failed to detect a lot of the cases that came out, even though, you know, these patients went to the hospital looking for detection. You know, our system was unable to detect it. So clearly the world is working on this. But broadly speaking, South Korea seems to be dealing with it proactively and at a perhaps scale that is admirable. Which brings us to the question, which is South Korea is currently the country with the second largest number of people who have been detected with coronavirus. Is it your sense that South Korea has actually been infected more than other countries, or is it just that South Korea, by virtue of having these very proactive, aggressive detection capacities, and also the benefits of having a free universal healthcare system, are they just catching more people with this infection?
It's hard to say definitively, but that hypothesis certainly does carry a lot of water, especially when you think about it in a comparison sense, as you alluded to, on testing. And you mentioned the U.S. and the CDC. Vice President Pence today said that the CDC is planning to roll out kits that can test up to 1.5 million people in the United States by the end of the week, which is pretty slow, I guess, considering how quickly this could spread, as well as the number of deaths in the United States so far, which is close to a dozen. And comparatively, where South Korea was at that time, I know we have different countries facing different challenges, South Korea being a lot smaller than the United States. But South Korea really has done an admirable job, not only in testing, but being extremely transparent in how it's going about attacking the virus. And that draws a sharp contrast to the way the Chinese initially responded to the coronavirus. There's 80,000 cases confirmed there now, and the numbers are slowing coming out of China. But there are still those nagging questions about transparency in China and are those numbers that we're seeing, are they actually reflective of the reality on the ground? But that's not to say that they're not without its challenges, too. I think something that the government has been criticized for, among other things, is the lack of hospital beds available, particularly in Daegu and the surrounding areas. And that's something that they're trying to address by having the military actually get involved to provide the necessary hospital care for the individuals that have been infected by the disease.
Kyle, you're an expert in South Korea's economy and South Korea's external trade relations in the region. Let's, again, providing a little context for listeners. The infection rate, although increasing very rapidly, is at 6,000. It has infected a sliver of the 60 million people living in South Korea. And again, the city that's been infected is Daegu, which is not the largest city in South Korea. It's not even the second largest city in South Korea. So what has been the economic impact of the coronavirus outbreak in South Korea so far?
Much like anything else in economics, what's really important is how people feel about something and how those feelings really translate into discernible actions. And so with the coronavirus, the fear is that if you're going about your daily life, you contract the disease, spread it, potentially die. And what's most concerning about the disease from an economic standpoint is that it'll potentially change people's everyday behavior. If you're changing the way you go about your daily economic activity, then that has a major impact on the demand side of the economy. And so that really could be a lasting negative impact of this, and it could really hurt South Korea in the coming weeks and months. The government is rolling out a $10 billion fiscal stimulus package to try and hold the economy over, boost demand. But it's really hard to be able to boost demand based off of the traditional ways that we think about the economy if people aren't meeting and assembling and going about their daily lives as they otherwise would. There's just not as much money to spend on. If they're changing their behavior, that fiscal stimulus is fundamentally going to be less effective.
That's a very important point you bring about the internal economy. But we also know that South Korea is a very export-dependent economy. Its largest trade partner is also China, which has been not only the epicenter, but the country that's been most heavily hit by the coronavirus. What's been going on with South Korea's external trade position with the advent of the coronavirus?
So exports have been down, but they've been down for a while now. There was an expectation that with the temporary uptick in prices for semiconductors earlier this year, late last year, that South Korean exports would rise again. And what we've seen with the coronavirus, it sort of slowed that external demand for what South Korea produces and makes a lot of money off of, chiefly semiconductors in recent years. And so there's been a lot of temporary disruptions to South Korean manufacturers. There's been a lot of notable cases, including South Korea's Hyundai plant in Ulsan, which was temporarily shut down, as well as some other plants that Korea has domestically because parts from China weren't coming over. But what's also really important here, too, is that as the disease has spread to South Korea, it's impacted its own ability to export because not only are you running into the problems that you had in China, but you're running into those same problems in Korea. South Korea is also a manufacturing hub, and Samsung produces most of its semiconductors in South Korea, and it had to close down a phone factory in Gumi, just outside of Daegu, at least temporarily closed down that factory with 1,500 workers quarantined when a few of the workers were found to have the coronavirus. And then the Hyundai car plant in Ulsan that I mentioned a bit earlier, it was forced to shut down after it didn't have parts from China earlier this year, but now it was also in the past week or so forced to shut down because of workers in its own plant had the virus. So not only is it facing external headwinds with China, but it's facing it at home. And I think with the coronavirus, it's really highlighting how the border between external and internal economy is sort of blurred with the spread of the virus because it's hitting on all fronts for South Korea. And as a country that's probably one of the largest export-dependent economy, South Korea really disproportionately faces negative economic consequences from the disease.
Of course, manufacturing pieces not coming from China that you mentioned is because Chinese factories are shut down because of the fears that continued operation of these factories might lead to further contagion of Chinese workers within China. Therefore, input parts that would have been made in those factories are not being made. Ergo, they're not being delivered to South Korea. Ergo, Korean car manufacturers can't finish their cars.
Exactly.
Have there been unexpectedly adverse consequences of this economic slowdown? Or have there been any groups in South Korea that have been particularly affected by the outbreak of the coronavirus and the economic consequences that you mentioned?
Yeah. So the lowest wage earners and those with the least job security are the hardest hit in any crisis. And in Korea, it's those who are in the temporary lane of South Korea's dual labor market. This has been a enduring issue since the Asian financial crisis in the late 90s. And this is something the Moon government had tried to address, had planned to address, but has seen limited successes in really rehauling the system that the Moon government inherited. A large part of this has to do with just decreased consumer sentiment. A lot of these people work in retail shops and stores, and there's been a sharp decline in the Bank of Korea's Composite Consumer Sentiment Index, which it released last week. The index fell by 7.3 points last week, which is the largest fall since June 2015 in the midst of the MERS syndrome. But those figures were taken from a survey between February 10th and 17th. Before patient 31 and the COVID cases really took off in South Korea. So the consumer sentiment is actually much lower than the official numbers suggest. I think anecdotally there is a lot of evidence to support that.
And of course, this is because people are no longer going outside. They're not engaging in face-to-face purchases. They're not dealing with industries that these irregular workers that you mentioned might be more apt to be employed in. Of course, this is exacerbating an ongoing trend in South Korea, which is manufacturing has been automated. These retail services are also being digitized. So this coronavirus, while not pivoting the conditions for irregular workers into something that was good, into something that's bad, but it has exacerbated, I guess, existing pressures on this community.
That's a good way of putting it.
Now, the people's sentiments that you mentioned matter a lot for South Korean politicians in the coming weeks and months because there is a general election for the legislature of South Korea in April of this year. There's been a lot of discussions on exactly what platforms and what issues might drive people's decisions at the ballot, but it seems like the main issue that a lot of people will be keeping in their minds as they vote will be the government's response and their effectiveness in terms of containing the coronavirus. Could you give us a brief overview on the political dynamics as we head into April?
If you were to ask anyone in South Korea what would have been the key issue going into the National Assembly elections in April, across the board, everyone would have said the economy. And now the economy is certainly related to the coronavirus and how the fallout from the coronavirus impacts the economy. But now, as you mentioned, the coronavirus itself is really the wild card issue that will be prominent on voters' minds as they go to the polls on April 15th. And I don't know how much of an impact it will actually have on the elections, in as much as where the center of the outbreak really is. So Daegu and the surrounding provinces, Gyeongsangnam-do and Gyeongsangbuk-do, are really conservative strongholds. And if you look back at the last National Assembly election in 2016, 8 out of 12 seats in Daegu went to conservatives, 12 of 16 in Gyeongsangnam-do went to conservatives, and then all 13 seats in Gyeongsangbuk-do went to conservatives. And so Seoul and Gyeonggi-do in the northwest, there's a lot more ability to sway voters' minds going into the ballot box. And so if the outbreak really had hit Seoul and Gyeonggi-do, it would have hit the economy probably a lot harder, but it also would have hit politically a lot harder too, because that could have changed how people were going to vote. But what we've seen on the ground, to go back to your question, is that Moon's approval rating is largely the same. It's still about 40 to 45% in that range, and it hasn't changed because of the coronavirus. Now, there have been changes within those numbers, and they show that Daegu is getting more anti-Moon, as well as the surrounding areas are really leaning more towards the conservatives. But overall, across the rest of the country, people who are supporting Moon are citing his reaction to the coronavirus is actually one of the top reasons why they support him. So overall, because of where the virus is hit, I don't know if it's going to have as much of an impact on the National Assembly elections. But that all could change very quickly, as we've learned with this coronavirus. The situation differs from day to day.
So what you're suggesting is that if the infectious disease does spread to other areas outside of these conservative strongholds, that it may have an impact on the election broadly. But so far, it seems like it actually hasn't changed the needle that much, with conservative regions becoming more entrenched in the conservative camp and other regions kind of staying quite the same because they are less affected.
Yeah, and I think at the margins it will have some impact. But in terms of the larger overall impact, because as you know, all 300 seats in the National Assembly are up for grabs now. And so overall, I don't know how much of an impact it's going to have. It could result in a few seats here or there going conservative, but that could also be offset by people who look to Moon's leadership under the coronavirus, especially as it relates to the previous administration and how she handled the MERS outbreak. They look to how Moon handles things, and they could look to vote for Moon's party in the National Assembly.
And could you explain that a little bit? Well, how did the previous administration handle the MERS outbreak?
In short, not well. And it was actually interesting to go back and look at articles about how Park Geun-hye responded to the MERS outbreak, and that really portended a lot of the same issues that ultimately led to her impeachment, about a lack of transparency and responsiveness, because that's what happened with MERS. And the MERS outbreak in 2015, the government was slow to react, and they took about 18 days before the government officially disclosed the centers of the outbreak, which were these hospitals in Korea. And the disease wasn't as widespread as COVID-19 is, but because the government was perceived to handle the outbreak so ineptly, it really put a microscope on the Park administration and caused many to question her leadership. And if you compare what's going on now to what's going on then, I know there have been a number of conservative op-eds against Moon in certain cases. The KCDC had a day or so lag between announcing some deaths, some of the coronavirus cases where Park Geun-hye took 18 days back in 2015. There's a really big difference between how Moon is tackling the problem and how Park handled the problem. And I think because Park handled it so poorly and ended up in a situation that Moon doesn't necessarily want to find himself in, he's really had that extra push to make sure that people know that he's doing everything that he can to make sure that they're safe, because public safety has been a major political issue in the past few years in South Korea. So making sure that they're safe and making sure that the fallout from the coronavirus, particularly the economy, is limited.
And for just context, I mean, much like our midterm elections in the United States, these legislative elections are usually, even though South Koreans are not going to the polls to select a new president, it is usually a referendum on their confidence in the Blue House.
Yes.
More so than their preference for this or that party.
Exactly. So now it seems like it's going to be a referendum on COVID-19, among other issues. But COVID-19 wasn't an issue before, and now it's going to take up a huge chunk of how people weigh who they're going to vote for.
So we've looked at how the Korean people might be looking at the Moon administration and its handling of this disease. How is the United States looking at it? What has there been any impact of the coronavirus on U.S.-Korea relationship?
So I think the U.S. government has shown signs of restraint in not banning all Koreans from coming to the United States, only exercising the highest level of caution with people that are coming from Daegu or traveling to Daegu. There's certainly a lot of effort to ensure that the United States and South Korea are working together to solve this issue together. As I mentioned earlier, South Korea is hugely dependent on the global economy, and I think that's partly some of the reason why the Moon government was hesitant at first to completely block visitors from China and only restrict Chinese citizens who are living in Wuhan and Hubei, the surrounding province. I think South Korea was very hesitant to block Chinese people as a whole from coming into South Korea because they were afraid of potentially other countries potentially doing the same to them, which would have disproportionately adverse impacts on South Korea. And Moon has caught a lot of flack on that decision from conservatives. But I think that sort of mentality is being exercised by the Koreans. It seems to be being exercised by the United States right now, being a little bit cautious about unilaterally closing off the borders to certain countries, essentially starting this beggar thy neighbor closure of the borders as it relates to the spread of the coronavirus, which could have a major impact on the global economy.
To close, Kyle, is there anything that you feel people are mistaken about in regards to the coronavirus and Korea, or things that you feel are most important for people to remember as we watch Korea's handling of the coronavirus?
I would just say to remember to put it in a comparative perspective. If you're being hyperly critical of the Korean government, I think there are certainly reasons to be critical of how the Moon administration has handled this, but I think overall, in a comparative sense, it has been handled quite admirably. And it's also important to remember to not be too optimistic about how the disease is being contained, because as we've seen previously, even with the government's best efforts, there are opportunities for this disease to spread quickly.
That's it for our episode today. Many thanks to KEI Fellow and Director of Academic Affairs, Kyle Ferrier, and to you, listeners, for tuning in. You can find Kyle Ferrier's recent pieces for The Diplomat magazine in the description of this episode. KEI will be keeping a close eye on developments around the coronavirus and continue to provide commentary and analysis going forward. If you have not yet checked out our interview from last week with Dr. John Grundy on how North Korea might be addressing the coronavirus outbreak, we highly recommend listening to that episode. And we'll be back next week. See you then.